Good morning.
Good morning,
everyone. Nice to see you all today. So today I'm going to talk about a number of things. One of them was the theme for the annual Hokioji Women's Retreat this year, called True Heart. So I'll be talking about that a little bit, and also about a case. We'll start with the case, or the little story. You have it on your... actually, I'm going to read something else first, and then we'll go to that. So there's a story. There's many stories in the Zen koan collections that a student goes to his master, her master, and says, announces that he or she has penetrated to the meaning, the nature of the universe, grasped the meaning of emptiness, and has come to realize that, in fact, everything is empty, that the world is made up of emptiness. And in fact, it's nothing but emptiness. And the teacher whacks the student. You've heard those stories, right? Those stories where the student's getting whacked. There's a lot of those stories. Ouch! Ow! Said the student, completely confused. That hurt. What'd you do that for? And the master says, not so empty now, is it? So that's an awakening moment, isn't it? But it's not very gentle. It's not very gentle. So this case on your program's a little bit more gentle than that. Master Keizan Jokin asked the nun, Mofuku Sonin. Mofuku Sonin is in our list of female ancestors that we chant here. And Keizan came a couple generations after Dogen, but in the Japanese Soto tradition, he's considered to be kind of like a Dogen's... not so much as contemporary, but they sort of present them as a team. That Keizan is the soft, feminine one, and Dogen's the macho guy, you know, the strict guy, macho guy. And Keizan was said to have been deeply influenced by his mother and his grandmother, his grandmother had been in Dogen's sangha, and was a very devoted practitioner of the Dharma. So Master Keizan Jokin asked the nun, Mofuku Sonin, the winter is coming to an end, and the springtime is arriving. There's an order to this. What is your understanding? Sonin replied, in the branches of a tree without shade, how could there be any season? Keizan asked her, what about right now? Sonin bowed. Keizan then transmitted the Dharma robe to her. So, this is a story from one of the many collections, and it comes from the book, The Hidden Lamp, a recent book of collections of cases with commentaries by Soto Zen women. And also it comes from Women of the Way, Sally Tisdale's book. It's an older book. So this is common. The teacher is testing the understanding of the student. He's much more gentle than the first master. And she bows. She bows. Now, I think her understanding is pretty good. In this little encounter story. I think she's talking about emptiness there. She's saying, you know, what else is there? You know, just this. This tree is empty. You know, this tree, it's not about spring or the passing of time, or to everything there is a season. She just brings it right to the fundamental point. It's emptiness. But then he says, but what about right now? Right here. He asks her to bring it to the moment. Bring it to the encounter between the two of them, right here and now. And she does. She responds. I can imagine her. I imagine this. You know, I've got a good imagination, I guess. I imagine her just receiving that, her there eye to eye, and she bows all the way down, full prostration, because in that moment they really meet. It's very intimate. He points out to her very gently where that, you know, that's good, but it's a little one-sided still. Your understanding's still a little bit one-sided. There's emptiness in form. What about this form here of you and I? And she expresses that without words, with a gesture, and with full presence. And there's something that passes between them that's very alive and very intimate. So I find that this is a very potent little story for me. So winter or spring, snow and ice, leaves and flowers. Holding up the one among the many, she says, how could there be any season? You know? Anything predictable, anything ordinary, conventional. She's pushing beyond that. And after all, we had our understanding of the seasons is never going to be the same after this year. After what we've experienced, it will never be the same. So don't know mind. Don't know mind. We don't know what's going to happen. So, let's see. So this meeting of heart minds with the two of them is the total picture of everything coming together into the present moment, which is what Zen practice is about. It's about waking up together with all things that come together to make this moment and the next moment and then the next, but fully entering each one, fully being present with all that goes into that. And before thought, before our thinking comes into it. Okay, that's awakening. Awakening to what is happening right here now. Before thought, before we put on it our preconceived ideas and all of our baggage, all of our discriminating. Because we tend to think in terms of dualisms, pairs of opposites. And there are teachings that actually kind of address that, pairs of teachings, like form and emptiness. Emptiness is form. Delusion and awakening. The stories of delusion and awakening. Samsara and nirvana, and no self and true self, or essential self. You often see those things paired. They help us to enter into the teachings and get that guidance. So, I found, you know, in terms of this little story being potent for me, that I think back, since both of my parents died in the last couple years, to the encounters that we had, the intimate space that we shared in those moments that were beyond sickness and health. You know, life and death, living or dying, you know, good, bad, right, wrong. Beyond that, we were able to leap to the place to be right there, right there in the present moment together, really meeting in an intimate way. And that's what these stories point to. And Zen especially is that intimacy, that heart-to-heart connection, that fully present together with another being or with all beings, with everything. You know, the unfurling ferns in the yards. Oh, I went for a walk last night and it was fabulous looking at all the new green stuff passing, you know, mown grass already, and just seeing things come up. It's so fantastic. Such joy there just arising. So being really awake to that and waking up together. So that's what I believe we're really doing here today. And whenever we come together as a Sangha in myriad different permutations here, is that we're waking up together. You know, we can do a little bit on our own, you know, and we really have to, the intention and the determination and the aspiration has to come from us as individuals, but we need each other, and I really believe we do it together, we awaken together. So that's what I see us doing here. And so I'm going to make a few points about that, about when we come to practice here. Maybe for the first time for some of you, and for many of you, I'm recognizing it's not the first time. It's many, many times that you've come back, which is wonderful. But one of the things that we do as in the process of waking up is to become real. Become real. Become true. Our true selves. Kind of like a little bit reminds me of the book Velveteen Rabbit from childhood. You know, you're aware of that book. The rabbit, you know, it's a stuffed toy, right? But through suffering and being loved very, very much and held and washed and all kinds of things, misplaced and confused and everything else, Velveteen Rabbit becomes alive, fully alive, becomes real. So I like that as a metaphor for what happens when we enter into the practice and become conscious of our whole body and mind, and we see what's in our heart. We sit down and see what comes up there. So one of the things that we do when we first start to practice is we start to recognize the myths and the beliefs and all the cultural baggage that have been given to us, right? We just see that. We just see that, and we begin to realize, oh, well, that's not me. This is me, I think. I think this is me, and that's not me. And so it's a process of discernment and winnowing. I remember Katagiri used to say, we just sit down and chew our cud like cows, in you know, ruminants who have many stomachs. So sitting through a retreat or even a couple sits, we have the opportunity to digest the content of our lives, the content of our beliefs, we can see our habitual patterns of thought that box us into a corner. And then we can drop it. Mm-hmm. See it again. Drop it. It's very freeing. And then there we can see the delusions. One of the big delusions I think that many of us harbor, contrary to all the evidence out there, is that some people die, and it's really sad that they do, but I won't. It's not going to happen to me. It sounds crazy, doesn't it? But hey, I think if you really look closely, you see that creeping in, you know, in different ways, that delusion. It's very human. So it's, you know, there's this part of you that knows that that's just crazy talk. You know, you've seen enough evidence. Those of you who are older have seen much more evidence of the fact that we are as impermanent as everything else that's alive. But we do harbor these delusions, and some of them are very deeply below our conscious awareness, and waking up is waking up to those. So sometimes it's hard work to see all that, but very important to sit down and do that. So another thing then is accepting constant flux and change as the nature of our very existence, and even coming to celebrate that. The reason the flowers are so beautiful is because they're impermanent. They don't last. The reason our relationships are precious. And my relationship with my parents became precious. And I wasn't always like that. Not growing up. But it became that, you know, knowing there was only so much time. That's a very deep teaching. So, just sitting down and doing zazen and sitting, that's what we do in this practice, in our tradition. We come and we sit down and we stop. We just stop. Stop doing. We stop striving. We stop thinking, maybe. We stop the motion, the constant motion. And we do the simplest human thing. The most essential thing. Not easy, but so simple. What could be simpler? Sitting in front of a wall, eyes cast down, focus maybe on the posture, because that helps. Focus, watching the breath. What could be simpler than that? Can you think of a single thing that's simpler than that, any of you? Than that activity? I'm challenging you. Nobody can think of anything? Well, there's my point. It is a very simple activity, and that's profoundly healing for us to do it. It's profoundly healing, and over time we really get in touch with that. I've really gotten in touch with that. So my friends have, so many of you have. It's profoundly healing. So it's a way to be a simple human. Have you seen those? Oh, never mind. I was going to go off about something. You know, there's a brand called Simple Human. And whenever I see it, and at Hokyoji we have some things that are like, oh, Simple Human. And whenever I see them, like the trash can in the bathroom, I think, God, that's a good name. I love that name, Simple Human. That's exactly what we strive to be, is a simple human. Not too fancy, not too complicated. We might think that's boring, and maybe it is at times, but it is profoundly healing. Healing ourselves and healing the world around us. We can't help it. So, we're like the lotus blooming out of the mud. We're blooming when we do this practice, blooming out of the mud with purity like the lotus. We are the mud. You know, if you think about it, our spine is like the stem of the lotus flower. And in our spine, there's a lot of fluid. And in a lot of flowers and plants, there's water and fluid. And at the top of this is what? Our head. Now, we might not think of our head as a bloom or a blossom. But it blossoms when we connect it to the heart. And the head and the heart and the hara, or as they say in China, Tan Tian, this area below our navel, are balanced. Then bloom can happen right out of the mud. Think about it, we're full of blood and pus and excrement, and, you know, we just have all this stuff. We're, that's our nature, you know. But also, we have this profound potential and reality, which is living in a very awakened way. We're reaching for the light. Our lotus is reaching for the light. It's reaching for clarity. It's imbued with compassion. So this dualism and the way we think also have a dual nature, in that we are both confused, and we are, you know, in the muck, in the mud, the primal ooze, but we're also just, it's our birthright, compassion, kindness, connection. I have a Qigong teacher who gives these little lectures with the class, and he talks about, in Chinese medicine, the heart as being connected to the element of fire. And we're moving into summer after this. I hope, I think we are. And summer is the fire element time. And the heart is the organ of perception, of connection. Connection and balance is what he says. And so we're synthesizing the sort of gut knowledge of our Tantian, that intuitive flash, that gut feeling, with the more, you know, cerebral cognitive processing of our frontal lobe. It comes together in the heart. There's even some research about that, about how important the heart is as an organ of perception for us. This upright practice is really helping us to see purely without obstruction. So pure is kind of a problematic word, but without obstruction, without, you know, to before thought. So the other thing we do when we get here is both lighten up and sober up. So, you know, when I came to Zen Center, I think I felt the weight of dukkha, of dissatisfaction and some suffering in my life. And it was actually just good to hear it named. You know, there's even a noble truth devoted to it, you know, in Buddhism. That's a relief, you know. There's no denial of that aspect. And it's even lifted up to be a very important teaching. So for me, one of the first things I did was lighten up. That acknowledgement of suffering and dukkha helped me lighten up, helped me lay down some of my load. So that's one thing we do. And the community, the teaching, the community, the practice, the help from mentors and teachers creates a joy about doing, you know, this practice, which is challenging. It's deeply challenging, but there's a joy about sharing that. And so that's when we lighten up. And then the other thing we do is sober up. We sober up. So maybe we are a bit giddy. Are some of you giddy? I don't know. You look pretty serious this morning, but maybe we're really talkative. We talk a lot. Maybe people mentioned that they think maybe we talk a little too much, or, you know. So slowing down and sobering up happens, you know, especially in retreat practice. In retreat practice, we really get in touch with what is, just is, without our evaluation of it, whether we think it's just great and just wonderful and exciting, or whether we think it's just a bummer and we're not, you know, we don't like it. It just cuts through both extremes, and we sober up. We sober up. We see things much more clearly. And it gives us a chance to, for me, when I first started sitting, I was younger, I had a lot of emotional fireworks going on. So So I would come to retreat, I'd certainly see those, and I'd see them in my daily life. But the practice of sitting down and sobering up and relaxing into the moment and the posture created a bit of space from the emotions, you know, all of the drama. So I think what happens is when we stop, there's a cooling effect. You know, the fires are damped down, they're cooled, and we can get a little space between ourselves and our experience. So, and you know, you've heard what the fires are: greed, hatred or anger, delusion. Those are the three poisons, those are called the three poisons in Buddhism, and they're said to arise endlessly. So, not continuously, but it's not like we're ever going to completely, you know, extinguish those. But we can see them. We can see them. We can see even the seed of them, a tiny seed of them. And by seeing that, we can then, you know, change our reaction to those, change our response to them, change our behavior. And also, the good news is that loving kindness, compassion, patience, generosity are also right there in our experience, and to be cultivated and to be brought to our experience. And it helps us with those fires, helps us to put out those fires. I'm advocating is that we aspire together to realize true heart, or the heart mind, what the third ancestor called the heart mind. Trust in the heart mind is, or faith in the heart mind is famous. Sutra, which I know Tim has covered many times here in our Sunday talks, repeatedly gone through that. And the main point of that is, you know, his famous line is, the great way is not difficult. So the great way of true heart manifesting in this life together, can't do it alone, I think, is not difficult for one who has ceased picking and choosing. So the practice is to, especially in retreat, just come, let go of picking and choosing. Such a relief, actually, to let go of picking and choosing and deciding, you know, what am I going to have for dinner? How do I get that food? I have to go shop for it. Well, you know, it's just a swirl of decisions, and you know, there's a lot of picking and choosing and discriminating there every day in our lives. When we come to retreat, we can let go of that completely and just be present and allow ourselves to see all these things that I've been talking about, and to just dwell in emptiness with all the beings. So, Katagiri has a quote about the great way that I'd like to read to you from. He mentions from You Have to Say Something, second book, and he mentions true heart in this quite a bit. I think during the period of time that this book was came out of his talks, he was speaking about that quite often, and the reason we chose it for our theme for the women's retreat is because of that. There's a beautiful calligraphy that he did. He would do kanji, you know, that expresses true heart. And I remember that from years ago. Okay, so he's talking about needing to hear things explained. Most people are used to having things explained. But all we get in this way is the surface of human life. It's very difficult to see what's profound and deep through such ordinary teaching. The real meaning dies. But most of us are not patient enough to learn to see what's beneath the surface. It takes time to touch what is deep. That's why we have to practice patience. We have to see what's behind physical and verbal expressions. To understand this, your intention must be very strong. You must seek this understanding with complete sincerity for a long time. But if you're patient and sincere, even one word can touch the heart. A specific word itself is not so important. If used properly, it can carry a profound meaning. Yet it's very, very difficult to say just what that meaning is. It's like trying to explain how one awakens. So, he always used to talk about how we always see everything and measure everything through our own yardstick. That, you know, we can't help that. But it's so important, you know, the practice is to see, is to experience before we get out the yardstick. To see when the yardstick comes out and grab it. Like the Zen master, and get that out of the picture if we can. It's pretty hard. It's probably impossible, but just seeing that is really helpful. So heart mind, according to Katagiri, is beyond being open minded, and what it means is being one with the world. Rather than seeing ourselves as in the world but separate from it, acting upon the world or being acted upon by the world, it's being intimately part of the world, intimately part of the moment, of everything that comes into the moment, and not splitting off in that way. Our language splits us off in that way. So you can see the challenge, the way our language is structured. And according to Katagiri, peace is already here. Peace is already here. We talk about developing our hearts, our connection to our heart, so we can experience peace. But peace is here. It's just a matter of harmonizing with it, of seeing it and being it. And compassion is like the spring water in the ground. And we just need to drive our pipe down, you know, and let it fill. That's all we have to do. So noticing, relaxing our boundaries of self and other as we move through the world and encounter apparent others, that awareness is helpful. Stop judging ourselves. That's really helpful. It's a bummer to judge ourselves. It's unnecessary. Ourselves or others. The Metta Sutra says it like this: radiating goodness throughout the entire world. Cultivating metta or loving kindness, even though sometimes we feel foolish doing these practices. Some of us are real comfortable with sitting down and doing zazen. And just, you know, we're cool with that. But cultivating loving kindness, doing tonglen, practicing counsel, listening and speaking from the heart. Some of those things feel artificial to us, but they still work. They're still really helpful. So don't give up with those things, because that's part of developing. That's the emptiness in form part. That's developing our heart mind, is to do those practices. So I just want to end by telling you a little bit about the retreat and how we worked with True Heart at the retreat. We like to experiment at these women's retreats, and it's a lot of fun to do that. So we do sitting. We sit. We do Zazen, and we practice not picking and choosing, just following the schedule. But we also do, and I was bragging to Tim, we fit 9 sits in on the Saturday of the retreat. But along with 9 sits, talk about time, mind-bending. Let's look at this. We had 3 meals together. We had 9 sits. We had a service. We did yoga, opening the heart yoga. We did voice, embodied chanting, opening the throat, opening the voice. And we also did art practice. Expressing, attempting, playing, and expressing to heart as best we could from everything that we've been doing together. There were also some group talking and listening from the heart. So, I mean, we went to bed at 9, so go figure. How did this all fit in? It's just one of those mind-blowing, you know, the Malakirti in the room with the 1,000 bodhisattvas kind of experiences. and I think that what was beautiful about it was to see how people felt sort of tender and vulnerable, you know, what's it going to be like with these folks and what am I going to be expected to do? But there's just a group courage that grew, a group courage that they grew and grew, and an openness. And so this mixture of silence and the natural environment, the stars and the grasses and the times to speak, times to be silent, the rhythm of the schedule, and then the ways to express ourselves all came together, I think, in a very potent way. Wouldn't you say so, Lena? Lena was there. So that's how we worked with True Heart. And it's a wonderful practice amongst many to do that. And as to end, I will share with you just a piece of my art. I don't have a poem for you today. I have a piece of my art. And I want to tell you, I'm in the middle way about this. I am not proud of this. And I am also not, oops, my quote came off, ashamed of it. I do not like it a lot or dislike it a lot. It just is what is. What was created. And the if you can't see, there's a picture of Kuan Yin leaning down, looking into the pool of koi. And the colors are very much like the colors that are bursting out now, the green. And the quote is, "You carry all the ingredients to turn your experience into joy. Mix them. And it's from Hathis. And everyone, we made it very easy to do this. There are plenty of art phobic people in any group. And we just tried to set the stage for people to ignore the voices that come up that say, I'm no good at this, or blah, 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 blah. So, anyway, that's what I have to share with you today. And I appreciate your coming and hearing the talk. And I wish you a vibrant rest of your day. Thank you. And if there's something you'd like to say, I've left that out. If you have a question or if there's a comment, story or anything you'd like to share, you're most welcome.
We went for a walk.
Oh, right. We fit that in, too. My outdoor mindfulness walks. Yeah. Those rituals. That's a ritual of spring, is to go, is to do that retreat for women down at Hokyoji. And those rituals are very, I think, very helpful. Daily life. So, nobody has anything to add or subtract, or
I would like to compliment you. Oh. I would like to say that your presence, I can just give you a dimension if you are an imaginative person. There was an exhibit at the MIA not too long ago about, I think, Indian botanists.
Botanical drawings. Yeah.
And if you walked into the room, you could see that they were good. And so if we walk into the room and listen to you, you can see that you're good. If you got really close, you can do that incredible.
I thought you were going to say, if you got really close, you could see the mud. That the mud is good, right? Thank you.
I guess I have a story here. I was sitting on this and trying to decide whether to say anything or not, so I'll say. So yesterday was a gorgeous day, and I was out walking on Nicollet Mall. And partly because it was a gorgeous day, on three consecutive street corners, there were street corner preachers who were out there delivering their message. Uh-huh. And there were variations on the theme of hell and damnation and what was going to happen to us all if we didn't wise up. But there was one group in particular, and this was a group of about, I don't know, 8 or 10 young black men, and I'm going to pass them frequently. I should say, typically my response when I'm being bombarded is to kind of withdraw into myself and say, yeah, it's bullshit, I'm not going to listen to that. But in any case, I don't know exactly what their message was. I can kind of approximate it, but basically they were saying, well, you know, Jesus was black, and all of this Christianity stuff that you white people are worshiping, you don't know what you're talking about. And it was essentially, I think, it was intended to be delivered to black people on the street and saying, come to us and learn the truth. Don't listen to the white devil. And somehow or another, this time, as I was walking by, I could connect to their suffering. And I had, that's basically the thing that I felt the strongest, is that I could feel their suffering, and I wanted somehow or another to acknowledge that. So I started out by gosh-oing, and we had this conversation for a little bit, but yeah. I said something about, and they were saying something about the white man, and my response was something like, well, Africa is the home of all of us. And then they quoted something from the scriptures about Jerusalem being our home. But I just did not feel threatened or challenged by this exchange. I just felt a sense of connection. And I have no idea what the consequences of this are. But I still feel concern for them and for all of us. But especially, you know, looking around at the complexions of most of the people in this room.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's all.
Thank you. I was hoping you would get to your distress. You were focusing...
Oh, well, that's a whole other story.
You were, well, let's not go too far into it, but... but just in response to your being so aware of their suffering, I was just wanting to hear...
Oh, it was because of my own experience that I could see that they were all doing the same thing. We're all trying to cope with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people, wow.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for pointing out the obvious too, which I often feel when I'm here, is that we are an awfully pale crowd here, you know. We're really pale. So that limits us. We're all limited, though, by some kind of, you know, our perspective, our background, our race, culture, class. It just goes with it. So, but to open up to other experiences is just so important, right?
Right. I actually was thanking them for their desire to bring this message. Even though I didn't agree with the message, I didn't say that, but they were motivated by a sense of goodwill, I guess, that even though what the message they were delivering was not a helpful one, except to me personally, at that moment, it was helpful to see. But anyway, I'm sorry, that's it.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, so our practice helps see what we're doing. Hopefully we can see what we're doing. Just, you know, about to stumble, about to fall in that hole. Oh, I can go around it. That's pretty good. Okay, if that's it, I'll just say thank you, and Dave has announcements.
Thank you, sir.